the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to episode number 43 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring The Selfish Giant by Oscar Wilde. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. This episode marks a personal milestone for me. As I have been planning, managing, and producing this podcast, my wife has been pretty indifferent about the whole thing. She prefers to read a book or story rather than listening to them. So while she supports my crazy recording and audio-related habits, and she's happy that it makes me happy, she's not been too interested in getting involved herself. But I found a way to make it happen. She once told me that The Selfish Giant was one of her favorite stories as a kid and as an adult. So I asked her if she'd be willing to read it for the podcast, and she said yes. So then I thought I'd get the kids involved as well. And now, today, I present to you the Latham family presentation of The Selfish Giant by Oscar Wilde. And no, we are not anything like the Von Trapp family. Oscar Wilde was born on October 16th, 1854, in Dublin, Ireland, and he is a well-known journalist, writer, playwright, and poet. After writing in different forms throughout the 1880s, he became one of London's most popular playwrights in the early 1890s. Among his most notable works are his plays The Importance of Being Earnest and An Ideal Husband, and his only novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray. He is also widely known for his satirical witticisms. Now, come with me, and let's journey into the giant's garden.
The Selfish Giant by Oscar Wilde. Every day, as they were coming home from school, the children used to go and play in the giant's garden. It was a large, lovely garden with soft green grass. Here and there, over the grass, stood beautiful flowers like stars. And there were 12 peach trees that in the springtime broke out into delicate blossoms of pink and pearl. In the autumn bore rich fruit. The birds sat on the trees and sang so sweetly that the children used to stop their games in order to listen to them.
"How happy we are here!"
they cried to each other. One day the giant came back. He had been to visit his friend, the Cornish ogre, and stayed with him for 7 years. After the 7 years were over, he had said all that he had to say, for his conversation was limited, and he determined to return to his own castle. When he arrived, he saw the children playing in the garden.
"What are you doing here?"
he cried in a very gruff voice, and the children ran away.
"My own garden is my own garden,"
said the giant.
"Anyone else can understand that, and I will allow nobody to play in it but myself."
So he built a high wall all around it and put up a notice board. "Trespassers will be persecuted." He was a very selfish giant. The poor children had now nowhere to play. They tried to play on the road, but the road was very dusty and full of hard stones, and they did not like it. They used to wander round the high wall when their lessons were over and talk about the beautiful garden inside.
How happy we were there,
they said to each other. Then the spring came, and all over the country there were little blossoms and little birds. Only in the garden of the selfish giant it was still winter. The birds did not care to sing in it, as there were no children, and the trees forgot to blossom. Once a beautiful flower put its head out from the grass, but when it saw the notice board, it was so sorry for the children that it slipped back into the ground again and went off to sleep. The only people who were pleased were the snow and the frost. Spring has forgotten this garden, they cried. So we will live here all the year round. The snow covered up the grass with her great white cloak, and the frost painted all the trees silver. Then they invited the North Wind to stay with them, and he came. He was wrapped in furs, and he roared all day about the garden and blew the chimney pots down. This is a delightful spot, he said. We must ask the hail on a visit. So the hail came. Every day for 3 hours he rattled on the roof of the castle till he broke most of the slates, and then he ran around and round the garden as fast as he could. He was dressed in gray, and his breath was like ice.
I cannot understand why the spring is so late in coming,
said the selfish giant, as he sat at the window and looked out at his cold white garden.
I hope there will be a change in the weather.
But the spring never came, nor the summer. The autumn gave golden fruit to every garden, but to the giant's garden she gave none.
He is too selfish,
she said. So it was always winter there, and the north wind and the hail and the frost and the snow danced about through the trees. One morning the giant was lying awake in bed when he heard some lovely music. It sounded so sweet to his ears that he thought it might be the king's musicians passing by. It was really only a little linnet singing outside his window, but it was so long since he had heard a bird sing in his garden that it seemed to him to be the most beautiful music in the world. Then the hail stopped dancing over his head, and the north wind ceased roaring, and a delicious perfume came to him through the open casement.
I believe the spring has come at last,
said the giant, and he jumped out of bed and looked out. What did he see? He saw a most wonderful sight. Through a little hole in the wall, the children had crept in, and they were sitting in the branches of the trees. In every tree that he could see, there was a little child, and the trees were so glad to have the children back again that they had covered themselves with blossoms and were waving their arms gently above the children's heads. The birds were flying about and twittering with delight, and the flowers were looking up through the green grass and laughing. It was a lovely scene. Only in one corner it was still winter. It was the farthest corner of the garden, and in it was standing a little boy. He was so small, and he could not reach up to the branches of the tree, and he was wandering all round it, crying bitterly. The poor tree was still quiet, covered with frost and snow, and the north wind was blowing and roaring above it. "Climb up, little boy," said the tree, and it bent its branches down as low as it could, but the boy was too tiny, and the giant's heart melted as he looked out.
How selfish I have been. Now I know why the spring would not come here. I will put that poor little boy on the top of the tree, and then I will knock down the wall, and my garden shall be the children's playground forever and ever.
He was really very sorry for what he had done. So he crept downstairs and opened the front door quite softly and went out into the garden. But when the children saw him, they were so frightened that they all ran away, and the garden became winter again. Only the little boy did not run, for his eyes were so full of tears that he did not see the giant coming. and the giant stole up behind him and took him gently into his hand and put him up into the tree. And the tree broke at once into blossom, and the birds came and sang on it, and the little boy stretched out his two arms and flung them round the giant's neck and kissed him. And the other children, when they saw that the giant was not wicked any longer, came running back, and with them came the spring.
"It is your garden now, little children,"
said the giant, and he took a great axe and knocked down the wall. And when the people were going to market at 12 o'clock, they found the giant playing with the children in the most beautiful garden they had ever seen. All day long they played, and in the evening they came to the giant to bid him goodbye.
"But where is your little companion, the boy I put into the tree?"
The giant loved him the best because he had kissed him.
"We don't know,"
answered the children.
"He has gone away."
"You must tell him to be sure and come here tomorrow,"
said the giant. But the children said that they did not know where he lived and had never seen him before, and the giant felt very sad. Every afternoon when school was over, the children came and played with the giant, but the little boy whom the giant loved was never seen again. The giant was very kind to all the children, yet he longed for his first little friend, and often spoke of him.
How I would like to see him,"
he used to say. Years went over, and the giant grew very old and feeble. He could not play about any more, so he sat in a huge armchair and watched the children at their games and admired his garden.
"I have many beautiful flowers, but the children are the most beautiful flowers of all."
One winter morning he looked out of his window as he was dressing. He did not hate the winter now, for he knew it was merely the spring asleep and that the flowers were resting. Suddenly he rubbed his eyes in wonder, and looked and looked. It certainly was a marvelous sight. In the farthest corner of the garden was a tree quite covered with lovely white blossoms. Its branches were all golden, and silver fruit hung down from them, and underneath it stood the little boy he had loved. Downstairs ran the giant in great joy, and out into the garden. He hastened across the grass and came near to the child, and when he came quite close, his face grew red with anger, and he said,
"Who hath dared to wound thee?"
For on the palms of the child's hands were the prints of two nails, and the prints of two nails were on the little feet.
"Who hath dared to wound thee?"
cried the giant.
"Tell me, that I may take my big sword and slay them."
"Nay,"
answered the child,
"but these are the wounds of love."
"Who art thou?"
said the giant, and a strange awe fell on him, and he knelt before the little child. And the child smiled on the giant and said to him,
"You'll let me play once in your garden. Today you shall come with me to my garden, which is paradise."
And when the children ran in that afternoon, they found the giant lying dead under the tree, all covered with white blossoms.
All right, so a quick look at your field guides. You will notice that the cast of characters is made up entirely of Lathams. So I'm going to forego the last name and just go on a first name basis. We had Kelly as the narrator, Nicole as the happy child, Megan as Spring, Parker as the answering child, Robbie as the beloved little boy, and I, lovable furry old Marshall, as the giant. As I said, this is one of my wife's favorite stories. When I asked her why, she said that she finds it very touching. And she is reminded of the scripture in the Bible where Jesus is describing those who have fed the hungry and relieved the thirsty, clothed the naked, and visited the sick. And he says, Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. And she feels the same way about the hymn, A Poor Wayfaring Man of Grief. I think what I like most about this story is that it is the innocence of the children, especially one child in particular, that finally pierces through the giant's selfish heart. And I can feel that as I look upon my own children. I may be incredibly frustrated with them and at my wit's end at times, but when I allow myself to look at them and try to see their hearts, my heart also melts. And not necessarily that I let them get away with what they were doing wrong, but my anger toward them is gone. To me, this story is much more of a parable than a fairy tale, which it is often referred to. As mentioned, it has an obvious reference to Jesus Christ and his representation as the little boy who invites the giant into paradise. And so the parallels to redemption and even to conversion readily come to mind. But like any good parable, I see many other things that can be taken from this story. One of the lines that stuck out to me was, "My own garden is my own garden." Clearly, the giant has legal claims to his garden, and it does belong to him. But do the children represent the 99%? Is it worth much to the giant if he does not share it? And willingly, I might add. What do the cold and the wind and the hail represent? I think this is the only Oscar Wilde tale that alludes directly to Christianity. And to be honest, I was a bit surprised that he went there, because most of the references to religion that are attributed to Wilde that I have heard are always quite cutting. One of my favorites is, "Missionaries, my dear, don't you realize that missionaries are the divinely provided food for the destitute and underfed cannibals? Whenever they are on the brink of starvation, heaven, in its infinite mercy, sends them a nice plump missionary." Some more serious quotes are, "Religion is like a blind man looking in a black room for a black cat that isn't there, and finding it." Or, "Truth, in matters of religion, is simply the opinion that has survived." Or, "Religion is the fashionable substitute for belief." Now, as a religious guy myself, I don't necessarily agree with these sentiments, other than I do see a difference between religion as an organization and the personal beliefs of the individual. And I, by no means, am an expert on Wilde. I have enjoyed his stories and plays and found many great moral lessons from his earlier work in particular. But I have never delved deeper into his life. So I was curious about his views on religion beyond these jaunty one-liners. And what I found was that Oscar Wilde had quite a mixed and varied relationship with religion. He was put on trial and imprisoned in London for his homosexuality, but he also had a lifelong attraction to the Catholic Church and was even baptized just prior to his death. According to the biography, The Unmasking of Oscar Wilde by Joseph Pierce, Wilde once wrote to a friend of the, quote, "beauty and necessity of the Incarnation," stating that it helped humanity, quote, "grasp the skirts of the infinite." In the same letter, Wilde said, "Since Christ, the dead world has woke up from sleep. Since him, we have lived." Stephen Good, a Washington Times reviewer of the biography, stated, "What has been ignored in the celebration of Wilde's wit and his sexuality, Mr. Pierce shows in this well-written biography, is the essential Wilde, the Wilde whose novel, plays, and marvelous stories all carry very strong and very traditional moral messages. And it is this morality that is central to Wilde's vision of the world," Mr. Pierce argues, not his flamboyance or his naughtiness. I will put links to the show notes to a couple interesting articles that I found on this subject, but you can always look them up on Wikipedia and do your own search to find out more. I was focusing just on the religious aspect of his life because, well, that is where the story, The Selfish Giant, led me to. But I am interested to learn more. I will close with a line from Oscar's novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, which critics at the time decried as decadent. The soul is a terrible reality. It can be bought and sold and bartered away. It can be poisoned or made perfect. There is a soul in each of us. I know it. So, do you have any opinions or comments about this story or this discussion? Well, you should know by now that you can always head on over to the forums and discuss it at will. Just go to freeforums.journeyinto.com. I have had a lot of fun putting this family production together. It is fun to involve the people that I love most in something that I love to do. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. Oh, and stay tuned after the episode ends for a few outtakes, if you like that sort of thing. But until next time, fellow journeyers, journey on. But I also must tell you that the Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, which means you can share it, just don't sell it or change it. And it also bears repeating that the theme music for the Journey Into podcast is provided by Man in Space.
I'm gonna say whatever I want.
Okay, say whatever you want.
Hello, I
I love you, I'm a little baby. I love you, I'm love. I'm happy here. I love you everywhere. No.
We don't know. He has gone away.
We don't know. He has gone away.
Okay, now pause between we don't know and he has gone away. So say. Okay, here, we'll do it this way. Say, we don't know.
We don't know.
He has gone away.
He has gone away.
That's it.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. For what? I had a clear in my throat.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah. Go.
He is too selfish.
He is too selfish.
No, that's like your.
He's too selfish.
He's too selfish.
That's how can we.
He's too selfish.
He's too selfish.
He's
stop
too
after
selfish.
He is too selfish.
Kinda he
like
is too selfish.
Okay, wait, Nicole. You're not The child smiled on the giant and said to him,
"You let me play once in your garden. Today you shall come with me to my garden, which is paradise."
Okay, say garden.
Garden.
Okay, you need to pronounce, enunciate the D. You're saying garden, which is what I do too when I talk. But when you're reading it, you want people to know exactly what it is, so you'll say,
garden.
You let me play. Well, not to be that guard, but the D is what I'm.
Garden.
No, you don't want to do that. You want to just say the D, because most people say garden. But you need to say garden.
Garden.
Okay?
Garden.
So,
garden.
And remember to pause. This is a comma, so you pause. Okay? And the child smiled on the giant and said to him,
"You let me play once in your garden."
Oh, say it again with garden.
"You let me play once in your garden. Today you shall come with me to my garden, which is paradise."
Garden.
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 Okay. Okay. One more time. Okay, so you're going to say three different things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
First you say, "How happy we are here."
How happy we are here.
And be like really happy, like you're playing in a garden.
How happy we are here.
That was good. Now, say almost the same thing, but say, "How happy we were there," but sound sad.
How happy we were there.
Sound like you're sad, like you just lost, like Parker just went, and you didn't have anybody to play with, and you're all by yourself, and say, "How happy we were there." Sad. Go ahead.
How happy we were here.
There. How happy we were there.
How happy we were there.
That's pretty good.
I don't know.
It won't cost much. Just your voice.
No.
I want your voice.
No, you don't.
Never underestimate the power of body language.
And I love that part.
What does she say?
Body language. Hey, Dad! Stop it! Now can I take these off?
Now you can take those off.